From the sports desk of the Lubbock Avalanche Journal and RedRaiders.com, here's your look at all things Texas Tech sports. Now, here's the Red Raider Podcast.
And hello, everyone. I'm Carlos Silva from the Lubbock Avalanche Journal, the sports editor at the newspaper, bringing you another edition of the Red Raider Podcast. A new edition where we have Ryan King out of KLBK, sports reporter, doing all this stuff as he normally does and taking some time out of his day, so we appreciate him coming in. Last week we had John Sokolov, not here this week, unfortunately. Like I said, a lot of agents and stuff. He didn't get the specific amount of water that he wanted, so unfortunately, Vaz, we weren't able to get enough for him, but we were able to get Ryan King back. He's always a good dude, so appreciate you, Ryan, and we'll kind of talk a little bit about Texas Tech football, a little bit of Texas Tech basketball, and anything else that kind of comes up, pardon me, through this, I guess, 30-minute conversation or so.
Hey, no, I appreciate it. I mean, I know you didn't have enough to get John, but that's, I guess you just moved all the assets you had into making sure I returned.
Absolutely.
So I very much appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Very glad to be a part of the Red Raider podcast network with Don Williams and you, Carlos.
Yeah, which apparently, I guess you have some little tricks up your sleeve, so it'll be interesting to see if so people that want to do some quiz stuff or just to kind of stump Don, I guess we can call it that. Obviously, we're going to ask a question here, as you kind of mentioned before, as we were kind of talking about this podcast before. You're going to ask a question, see if I can figure it out, which more than likely I probably won't. But if Don can do it, obviously that'll be the fun part, because I'm not going to tell him until I actually ask him. So.
Well, that's a good tease, too, because we're going to say that for the very end. So you got to stay for that. And then tune in on, when's it drop? Friday?
Yep.
And see if Don can, which I'll be honest, Don could, he'll probably get most of them right. But my,
you never know.
We can call it Stump the Don. I don't know.
It's worth, I have asked him. There was one time, I don't know what it was, but I used to do this at the press box. So it's funny that you start doing this. But I always used to, every time there was a road game or a home game when I used to travel on the road, I'd be like, hey, Don, when was the last time this happened? Because I think it was McLean Carter. When was the last time we had a left-handed starting quarterback? And he couldn't remember, and that was the first time he ever like didn't have something. So who knows? Maybe we'll get that situation. But yeah, as you all in the TV business do, we'll tease to that as we kind of get through this Texas Tech football game that a lot of people are upset, but not because they lost 33-30 in double overtime. More so because of a controversial call. Depending on how you want to look at it, I believe it was a pivotal call in a game that. Yes, here's how I'll kind of at least kind of frame this, Ryan. Everyone can look and say, oh, this was terrible. Yes, believe me, kick in the gut, kick to the nether region, whatever you want to say it was. Obviously, you know what it was. The conference confirmed to Kirby Hokut it was the incorrect call, so that obviously didn't soften the blow any bit. But for my money, you had a chance to stop Baylor before regulation ended. You were up three. You allowed a field goal, and unfortunately, that's what kind of took you to overtime. And I think that's going to be the one thing that really kind of sticks in the craw of Matt Wells and company, especially that defense, which is, at least for my money, has been playing not necessarily lights out, but just solid and getting better each week. And I have said this with Don before, and I don't know if you'll agree with this as well. He had talked to Kirby about this, and I kind of felt the same way. But if you can keep a team to under 30 points in Big 12 play, you have a good chance to win. And look at Tech. I mean, they basically held them to under 30 before. They obviously got the field goal and the field goal, but or the field goal and the touchdown, pardon me, but weren't able to kind of get that done. And I think that's what really hurts the most, is you had a chance to win it in regulation. You played very well throughout. I mean, you were up 6-3 at halftime. Didn't look like the typical Tech Baylor air raid offense, but all of a sudden you kind of see the semblance of what Matt Wells is looking for. You're trying to get Jed Duffy to play solid. You're not looking for him to kind of make these big plays, which unfortunately that was the one thing that you and I talked about in the previous podcast with John, is eventually he's going to have his bad game. He had his bad game. Two interceptions, obviously not good, but he still had the one touchdown throw. And then not only that, but then he was also able to run a couple times, 12 times for 23 yards. So he had that. But I think the one big proponent or the one good thing is Sir Roderick Thompson certainly looks like a really good running back. But just to kind of get to what you felt, Ryan, because I'm tired of talking right now and I'm tired of driving because I was driving from El Paso. Obviously, that's the reason we're going to talk Texas Tech basketball. But what did you see from that game?
Well, I'll start with that call like you just mentioned, then I'll get into breaking down that game. And honestly, you took the words right out of my mouth. That's exactly what I was going to say, is terrible call. The Big 12 obviously has already said to Kirby Hocutt, said to Texas Tech, they messed up the call. And it was pivotal. If you don't have that, Tech probably wins the game. All they have to do is get a field goal.
Yeah.
They more than likely win the game at that point. But I agree with you. As bad as that is, and that cannot be overlooked. You know, it's very bad luck on the officials. Yes. I completely agree with you. You scored a touchdown to take a lead with a minute and a half to go. Stop them. Stop them going down the field. And honestly, they should have lost in regulation. If you want to go down this road of what should have happened, Denzel Mims drops a touchdown in the end zone.
Yeah.
Or Baylor wins in regulation. So if you really want to go down that road of what could have happened, you can do that either way. I would look at, as good as the defense did play, they let them score right there at the end. They let them get right down
90
there.
90-plus yard drive, too, 90-plus
yards. They get in field goal range. They probably could have scored if they were not trying to be so conservative. And then in overtime, Baylor scored two touchdowns. You know, even after that fumble, they still had their chances. Obviously, it was a terrible call. It did cost them. But there are so many other things you can look at. I don't love the arguments of making excuses based off one bad call. Yes, it cost them, but also, like I just said, Denzel Mims dropped a ball inside the end zone with 6 seconds to go in the game, and it wouldn't even have mattered. That play wouldn't even have happened. Now, when you actually look at the game, I kind of wanted to go down the points we made last week and compare that to what actually happened. Something we mentioned is Baylor's only given up 3 turnovers heading into this game. 0 interceptions by Charlie Brewer, right?
Which, that was a good point by you. I really thought he was an underrated quarterback going into this, and mentioned that a couple times when I was on the radio as well for some of the Baylor people over there in East Texas. But, I mean, again, I'm just going off what I've seen at least on the TV and then kind of rewatching things. You're seeing this defense get better, and not only that, I don't even want to say that it got better, but it played about as well as it could have considering all the injuries and all the other things that you were talking about. Rico didn't play the first half. Evan Rambo stepped up. Douglas Coleman got another interception. Everyone that should be making plays was making plays, and I think that's just a credit to Keith Patterson and putting guys where they can be successful.
Well, and even bigger than that, Ingram's interception was in the end zone.
Yeah, Jamarcus Ingram, huge.
I mean, if that was not picked, the game's probably over there, too. They make I think, an 11-point game or 10-point game at that point. Tech doesn't come back and take the lead on the next touchdown. So that one was huge. What is killer, when you look in the turnover department, is they were up 2-0 in the turnovers, and they forced 3. They picked off a guy who'd thrown 0 3 times, and they still ended at a 0 on the game.
Yeah.
You can't do that. You cannot take the ball away 3 times against a team that hardly ever turns it over and still get back to 0. You have to be positive in that category. You have to.
This is true, but then the other thing that you can look at is this has happened before to Texas Tech. The one thing I will say that you can really kind of take into context and kind of see the non-statistical, the non-wins and losses, we passed for this many yards, we had this many touchdowns. There's resiliency from this defense. There's resiliency from this offense. They could have easily allowed that easy, instead of 11 plays, 89 yards, they could have easily allowed that in one big play. Like, they were making Baylor drive to score, which they eventually did. And yes, obviously we know what happened afterward, but it's not a situation where you're wondering, oh, is this going to really kind of end this quickly? It's not that situation anymore. Keith Patterson's being a little bit more aggressive, if you want to call it that. I think he's just finding situations where the players that he has on the field, he finds their best attributes and he puts them in that position where, again, Douglas Coleman, it's a nation-leading 6 interceptions now. He's obviously doing well. Eli Howard was getting some pressure, and Broderick Washington was getting some huge pressure as well. You're finding some contributions from some freshmen. Alex Hogan was one. You're looking at Tony Bradford as another guy. You mentioned Jamarcus Ingram, a guy that you hadn't really heard that much, but he was a guy at Utah State that really helped out over there with the Aggies and Matt Wells when he was over there. And then I'm trying to think of who else made some plays. Adrian Fry kind of came in. Yes, he had a couple penalties if you want to look at that, but for the most part, he made up for them with just kind of making sure that his name was not in there the rest of the day. And I thought that was really the thing that stuck with me was the fact that this was a typical game at the end of it. Like, the results saw the final score that you expected. But early on, Texas Tech looks like they can kind of go head-to-head with a tough physical team, which is what Matt Wells described Baylor as.
Well, you know what? Something else we talked about was how important Denzel Mims was to this team. And if you remember what I mentioned last week, heading into this week of games, Baylor and Oklahoma had played the same amount of games, roughly the same caliber of opponents, and CeeDee Lamb had one more yard than Denzel Mims.
Yes.
Denzel Mims was held to 65 yards.
That he was.
And if you caught any of the OU Texas game, CeeDee Lamb was not held to 65 yards. Well, he absolutely exploded in that game.
He also somehow missed five tackles at one point.
That's exactly right. But having said that, they did do well in Mims, which we did say would be key. However, Baylor also threw for 352 yards, and that's the most they've thrown so far.
No touchdowns, though.
No touchdowns. So it was a very much a bend-don't-break there, but the front's gained enough pressure, as we were talking about. The one thing I do want to look at, Carlos, on the defensive side, Baylor's defense. We talked about James Lynch going into this game, how important he would be. Well, I think something this team really has to focus on, based off this game and just going forward, that O-line, they need time to gel. They had Jet Duffy. You said it was his worst game, and it was. He had 5 sacks and 5 hurries against Baylor. I mean, very few quarterbacks are going to be that effective late in the game when they've been sacked 5 times, hurried 5 times. That's tough. And this O-line without Jack Anderson, we've talked about how much turnover there's been. They didn't have Madison Terrence Steele for most of the beginning of the year. Jack Anderson's now out. There's they need time to gel, because I think games like that, some of it's on Jet. Some of it has to go to the offensive line as well. If there's that many times you're getting pressured over and over, you're going to make bad decisions. You don't have time to just look from guy to guy. You look to run. You rush your progressions. And that's what I saw with Duffy out there. I was like, just with the naked eye, before I even looked at the stats, I thought he looked uncomfortable. That's what it seemed like to me against this Baylor front. And I think that's only going to be more of an issue as you get later into the year, because who knows, there could be more injuries. I just think this O-line's, and I think Steve Farmer's a great offensive line coach. He's shown in the past, he has a good track record. But to me, that's one of the biggest things on offense. If they want those explosive plays down the field, if they want Jet Duffy to be comfortable, then you have to give him some time.
Well, the one thing is, when he did get time, he was efficient. 74%, if I'm not mistaken, completion percentage. Obviously, 362 yards, a little tick below the 424 he had against Oklahoma State. The one thing that I did like, they did have big plays. You talked about having big plays, 79-yard throw that he had completed, so certainly some big things that are happening there.
RJ Turner, 7 catches, 138 yards.
Absolutely. RJ Turner, a guy that obviously they brought in to make some big plays and just to kind of help this offense out, did that. But the one thing that I will say that is hugely noticeable, even after the Oklahoma game that I kind of talked to Don about, is you just don't have guys that'll speed over some of these other Big 12 defensive athletes. And I think that's really the challenge here. Is obviously you're going to get some big plays, but maybe the only guy that I can think of that may have some speed is Sir Roderick Thompson. And even then, he's been kind of tackled a couple times where you thought you had a touchdown and potentially, obviously, it's ended at that point.
Now, you're spot on there. The question that I asked Coach Wells yesterday, one of my first questions that I was actually really interested with his response, was we asked him, like, he said the team needs to learn how to finish. And that's something a common theme we've heard from Coach Kingsbury the last couple of years, from Coach Wells this year. He said this team needs to learn how to win, how to finish games. And I do agree with that, but I asked him if Coach Wells was happy with how the team looked in the fourth quarter, how they looked late, because they need to learn how to finish, but they also scored a touchdown with 1.5 minutes to go on the road against a top 25 opponent. And he said he was very happy with the fight he saw late in the game. Obviously, what he meant by learning to finish is the offense did, but then the defense seemed to give up that long drive. But I don't think it can be overlooked that they're in what everyone says, McLean Stadium, a tough place to play now. Top 25 team. The Red Raiders are trying to get some momentum after, yes, they beat Oklahoma State, but they're still trying to get their feet back under them on the season overall. And they scored a touchdown with 1.5 minutes to go in the game to take a 4-point lead. Especially giving the ball back 3 times, I think that says a lot to be up that late in the game. So I think the fight is there. I think they've seen it. No, they didn't quite finish, but I think we're really splitting hairs. If you get that close, I mean, we're really splitting hairs between winning and losing, and they have the fight, and they have what it takes to get there, because like we were just talking about, if that snap is called a fumble, then we're saying, wow, look, they did learn how to finish.
Yeah,
big win. The defense made a turnover, and the offense scored with 1.5 minutes to go. So I think it's just splitting hairs at that point.
Again, so many variables when you look at one specific play, because you could always look at one play and say, oh, this could have happened this way, this could have happened the other way. But the important thing to me is, like I said, they're keeping it close in all their losses. To Arizona, they lost by 2 possessions. To Baylor, they lost by 1 possession. The only blowout, if you want to call it that, was Oklahoma. And even then, Coach Keith Patterson had mentioned that there were some plays that if maybe things kind of turned in favor of the Red Raiders, they're maybe down 20 to 10, I believe, is the score he mentioned to
us. Not to mention, that is by far the best team they're going to play all year.
Oh, absolutely.
You have to factor that into, like, it, even if it was just a straight-up blowout, Oklahoma is a big step up from TCU, Iowa State, these different teams they're going to play. But, yeah, you're right. It could have been a 10-point game right there at halftime against a top six team in the country.
Yeah. Other than that, I guess my only other thought on that is obviously there were some guys that got a little dinged up. Inside receiver McLean Maddox came up limping, but Wells said that he just got stepped on, so it looks like there's no significant injuries. The only thing that we got was Thomas Leggett concussion and cornerback Desmond Smith the knee. He both lumped them under day-to-day, which basically means that they could potentially play this week or...
Dez?
Desmond Smith.
Dez is day-to-day. It just looks so much worse when you're just limping off the field. You could barely even walk.
Well, here's the thing: day-to-day is the term that Matt Welch uses with players with injuries not assessed as long-term.
Oh, okay.
So basically, it could be 2 weeks, could be 3 weeks, could be several, whichever term you want to use. Obviously, some other big names that could be coming up. Alan Bowman is a guy that may be getting an X-ray according to David Yost in the next coming week or so. So we'll see if he comes back and if he's going to be able to play. Seth Collins is someone that is still potentially could be out, depending on what happens here. Obviously, you can read all that in the Lubbock Avalanche Journal, or you can watch KOBK with Ryan King as well. You can watch that. But any other final thoughts from that? I know everyone's going to want us to go up in arms about the call. Yes, it was a terrible call. I mean, there's no other way to say it. And the only reason we can say that is because the conference confirmed it was a bad call. It should have been turned the other way. It should have been Texas Tech ball. And as Matt Wells says, first and 10, let's go. So the only thing you can say is Texas Tech has at least kept it close, which is something, again, I hate doing the previous regime to the new regime, but this is something that there are some of these games where at least I can feel it. I may ask Don. I don't know how you feel about it because you've obviously covered this team a couple years as well, but there were certain points in that game where it's like Baylor was about to turn momentum, and then all of a sudden, as you said, Texas Tech goes, drives the ball, scores a touchdown, gets that 3-point lead. And obviously the final is a little bit different than what you thought, but the fact that they were able to do that is something that maybe I had not seen prior. And I don't know if it's just a mentality thing. I don't know if it's just a scheme thing, but there's a little bit of belief, and there's something to be said for something like that in a football team.
Yeah, I agree with that. You do see something different. I actually thought for the first time the difference I saw from this year's team to last year's team was that final drive against Baylor. Because if you remember last year, they went 3-0 non-conference. They beat a fairly good Houston team. Now, they didn't have Oklahoma early, but they went into Stillwater to beat Oklahoma State.
They did have De'Aaron King.
But last year they went into Stillwater to beat OSU. They beat OSU this year.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, well, there's a lot of similarities so far. There's nothing I can show that they're getting a whole lot better.
Well, the one interesting thing that I can remember is after that big Oklahoma State, when you go to West Virginia and you lose 42-34, I mean,
yes,
that's just one of those things where it's like you have this big win and you can't keep it consistent.
And that's why I thought that last drive in Baylor was pretty key. The offense put them in position to win late in the game. The defense put them in position throughout the game if the offense was there early.
Well, speaking of teams that Texas Tech lost to last year, since that's what we're doing, Iowa State was a team that hurt them 40-31. That was a little closer than... you would think. Alan Bowman probably didn't have his best game in that one. Had three interceptions from what I remember. That cloud defense that everyone always talks about that always was the bugaboo for Cliff Kingsbury.
Cloud?
Yeah, three double cloud thing. I couldn't remember the name of it. Three double cloud defense that was literally the bugaboo of Texas Tech. Got Alan Bowman. That was, I want to say, one of the first games where you really thought that, oh, he's a freshman at this point. Still threw for 323 yards and a touchdown, but those three interceptions were huge. Only sacked twice. And then not only that, but then the running game was less than efficient. The leading rusher was Alan Bowman, so that just goes to tell you all you need to know. De'Leon Ward at the time, before he was out of the program, had 16 yards. Tajon Henry had 10 yards. And Alan Bowman had, I take it back. He wasn't the leading rusher. I was looking at gain, not net. So he had 4 yards. So De'Leon Ward led you with 16 yards, even though that's still bad. Antoine Wesley obviously had the game that he was normally expected, as he had 1,000 yards and obviously all the accolades that he had. Now he's in the NFL. 119 yards and a touchdown, but took the loss because you had a really good running back in David Montgomery. He is now gone, so that's obviously a good thing for Tech, but they replaced him with a new guy. Mm-hmm. He's obviously really good, but the other thing that you return – even though he's been up and down so far this year, Brock Purdy, quarterback, I thought he was pretty good. he may be good again, but the thing that you also lose is Hakeem Butler mm-hmm. at the wide receiver position. So it's basically a matter of, can you handle the new talent that Iowa State is bringing in, and can you match the toughness that Iowa State will bring in? Because I really feel, just kind of going back to that term, toughness was something that was missing the last couple years. Cliff always talked about it. The tougher team's always going to win. Last week, I felt like Texas Tech matched the toughness of Baylor. It's just a matter of sometimes a call doesn't go your way, or sometimes the ball doesn't bounce your way, however you want to cliche it. This year, I think there's going to be something a little bit different, and the fact is Texas Tech's going to be at home. I think that's going to help a lot. I think in a way, if you want to look at a silver lining, maybe this controversial call is taking away the fact that Texas Tech did lose, and maybe you're going to get a little bit more excitement for this game that is at 11 a.m. I know a lot of people are saying that's kind of crummy, but then you look at the Texas Oklahoma game, and it was one of the highest rated games. Now, granted, it's Texas and Oklahoma, whatever you want to say with that, but still, obviously, if you're playing at 11 a.m., there's something that the TV networks think is pretty special about this contest. And what do you feel about it, Ryan?
Whenever I was doing the research for this yesterday, so in the Big 12, Iowa State averaging almost 38 points a game.
Yep.
Fifth.
Mm-hmm.
Tech, 31. That's eighth.
Yeah.
It's not great. Tech's also played OU,
mm-hmm.
OSU, who they put a lot of points on, Baylor. Yep. We're talking about those type of teams. Iowa State, these last couple weeks, did play K-State and TCU, was it?
I believe so. Let me double check that.
And then their non-conference, you got Northern Iowa. I mean, Iowa's good, but you got Northern Iowa and their other cream puff non-conference. I mean, they're going to have
Uni.
More points.
Don't forget Northern Iowa.
Oh, yeah, of course. Sorry about that. Brock Purdy, first in passing yards per game in the Big 12, 301. He's second in best. He has the best efficiency, second best efficiency in the conference as well. He's going to put up his points. He's a good player. Matt Campbell, that's the other thing about the Big 12 that's very underrated. We talked about Matt Rhule last week. Matt
good
Campbell
coaches.
And Brock Purdy, another very underrated coach and quarterback. I don't.
Mm-hmm.
Matt Campbell's probably not as underrated now as he was a couple years ago. People are starting to notice him.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of great coaches, a lot of great quarterbacks. So it does go from week to week. You go from Lincoln Riley and Jalen Hurts to Mike Gundy and Spencer Sanders, who showed talent hanging into that game.
He'll be good next year.
Yeah, then you have Matt Rhule and Charlie Brewer.
Mm-hmm.
Now you have Matt Campbell and Brock Purdy. I mean, it doesn't really get much easier. But Hakeem Butler is a big loss for him.
Mm-hmm.
I do agree with that. They do have two receivers.
Allen Lazard, too.
Yeah, I forgot about him, of course, 2 years ago. But
good wide receiver.
Great, very good wide receiver. Very, very good Packer right now.
Yes.
But I would say also has two of the top seven receivers in the Big 12 currently.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
With DeShonte Jones and Tariq Milton. So they don't have that one guy. We got used to Allen Lazard for 4 years over mm-hmm. and over and over. The last year it was Hakeem Butler.
Mm-hmm.
He was the guy. This year they have two guys though. And I think that's really what's key, honestly, is it might even make him more deadly to not have one guy to focus on, but two to spread it out to. The other problem is they do turn the ball over, but the same amount as Tech. They both turn the ball over eight times, so there's not really a hole you can take there. Now, they've fumbled it more than Tech has thrown interceptions, but it's about a wash. Roughly the same points per game, roughly the same turnovers. It's going to come down to if they can get to Purdy or not.
Mm-hmm.
Which, I mean, and that sounds very obvious. In most Big 12 games, it does come down to the quarterback, and I get that. But the other side of it, Iowa State's holding opponents to 20, Texas Tech holding them to 27. That's fourth and sixth. Again, that's a roughly the same
It's a possession.
Yeah, it's a possession difference, but Iowa State's main strength, and this is going off what you just said, who has to have a good game. Iowa State has the second best rush defense and total defense.
Yep.
So that's going to be big. I mean, if we can see another great game from Sir Roderick Thompson, where he runs for 153 yards and two touchdowns, and I think Tech is sitting real pretty. But that is something that would disappear throughout the seasons under Cliff Kingsbury, is the rushing. They would make it an emphasis early, but as we got later in the year, it started to fall away. And that's what would crater them a lot, is they became very one-dimensional.
Well, the other tough thing is when you get down by two or three possessions, you kind of have to throw the football at some point. And I think that's kind of the other thing that really kind of made it seem like Cliff and company were throwing a little bit more. But yes, to your point, I do believe that they were trying to potentially kind of offset the running game, as David Yost and company are doing that with the screens to the left. And then all of a sudden, here's the thing, is like when you see some of these screens, you talk about, I can't remember his name right now, R.J. Turner. Mm-hmm. He had a big play. And he was one of the guys where it's like you thought it was a touchdown because he broke through the defense and all of a sudden he was caught. It was just one of those deals where you have the good play call, you have the guy in the right position. It's just sometimes you just have to kind of find a way to make that play, because if not, you're going to miss out on that touchdown and it turns to either a field goal or sometimes you miss it. But to your point, Hakeem Butler and Allen Lazard, two guys that the one thing that I remember, huge catch radius, tall, strong 50-50 point guys. When you look at the two guys you were talking about in terms of the wide receiver, Deshaunte Jones and Tariq Milton, both 5'10". Mm-hmm. So you have a little bit of a...
Even the playing field?
I don't know if that's the word, but you certainly have a situation where you're not going to have to worry about doing those 50-50 balls unless you're going against like Charlie Kolar, 6'6 tight end that they have, or Michael Pettaway. I believe he's 6'2". He's a pretty good wide receiver for him as well. So it could be a situation where you're going to be looking at maybe stopping the run, which Breece Hall, he's been really good. And then not only that, but then Johnny Lang. Yeah, Johnny Lang, another guy. Brock Purdy, I know you talk about him being underrated. He's their third leading rusher.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's just you look at those type of things.
They can beat you in so many ways. That's
absolutely
the
problem. And it's not even the different ways, but they're not I'm trying to think of the word here. They're not going to be as potent as an Oklahoma, but they're going to be as tough as Baylor. Mm-hmm. So the thing you got to do is you have to establish the trenches, so to speak, which is going to be probably a tone that I will be continuing to go up until maybe you play West Virginia. I think that's a team that you should be able to win. Kansas State, you should be able to win that. So, or not Kansas State, pardon me, Kansas. And we'll obviously talk with some other things, but you have to establish that the trenches, slow down Breece Hall, slow down Johnny Lang, and if you make them one-dimensional, as you said, you don't necessarily have to worry about these balls that are getting thrown up and you're trying to hope that your 5'10 guy is trying to outmatch their 6'5 or 6'6 guy that they've had the last couple years. All you have to do is just keep it in front. Mm-hmm. If you keep it in front, you're okay, which that's been the problem when Texas Tech has allowed those big plays, is they've usually gone for touchdowns. Obviously, Oklahoma's one. Charlie Brewer was another one. You can look at Oklahoma State a couple times. Didn't happen a lot, but when it did happen, that hurt you. So I think if they're able to do that, that's going to put them in a good position to win, because Brock Purdy, I think, is going to see a defensive line that he hasn't seen before. Not necessarily in the sense that they're just going to get after him, but I think the defensive line is going to look a lot better because of the type of blitz packages that Keith Patterson has had. You're not going to see a blitz from the same side. You're not going to see the same amount of guys on the line. There's going to be guys standing up, hand in the ground. It's going to be different, and I think that's going to kind of mess with them a little bit. The interesting thing for me, at least, to watch, I mentioned it before, last year they did lose. Alan Bowman was a quarterback. You got a new quarterback this year, so I'm interested to see how Jet Duffy kind of plays against this defense, because it's not going to look the same as Baylor, but it has the same concepts where you have a lot of guys in coverage and you have to find the spot where your guy is going to be and you have to make a very accurate pass. So, again, it could go down to, can Jet Duffy break some runs, bring them up a little bit, and then you have a little bit more space to find your guys.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that, because that is something Coach Wells mentioned, how similar Iowa State and Baylor really are.
Yeah.
And something I wanted to highlight on the defense, we talked about James Lynch last week, who ended up with, I believe, I don't have the stats in front of me, but I believe 1.5 tackles for loss and a half sack.
I can look that up
on
while you're
Duffy.
Talking.
So he's first in the Big 12 as far as sacks go and all that. You know who's second in the Big 12?
Marcel Spears.
No, Orion Vance.
Oh, there you
of
go.
A member of the Iowa State Cyclones.
No,
so they go from first to second. Here, linebacker Ryan Vance has 7 sacks and 6.5 tackles for loss. So they're literally going from the best to the second best now, back-to-back weeks. And that's another time where I'm saying the offensive line has to be ready, because it's not going to get much easier. And if they're allowing that pressure on Jet Duffy again, back-to-back weeks, we could see a similar outcome. Because don't remember, they were right in that game last year in Ames, a tough place to play, and Alan Bowman had that safety because of the penalty in the end zone.
Yep.
So you can't have, and why was that? It's because he was getting uncomfortable back there. He could feel the guys coming up on him, and that's why if Jet Duffy, if that happens to him again in this game, just like Iowa State last year or Baylor last week, they're not going to be successful. They have to be able to protect him. And if you have these guys who are constantly getting to the quarterback, if they, I'll say this, if there's another 5-sack, 5-hurry game from Iowa State getting to Duffy, Tech's not going to win the game.
It's going to be difficult, because at least Tech was in the game when that did happen against Baylor. So at least we have that litmus part of that situation to look at. When you look at Blake Lynch, you were talking about a 1.5 tackles for loss, half a sack, 7 tackles, so pretty close to that. And then
good memory there.
Yeah, absolutely. You're kind of getting into Don territory right there. It's kind of scary, even though it's a a game a week. Probably ask him something else, and he probably knows something from 1975. But Marcel Spears was a guy that I remember was really good last year from the defense. He leads them with 43 tackles so far, 1.5 sacks. So certainly he's going to be a good one. Ryan Vance, I know you talked about him. Anthony Johnson, the guy, is second on the team with 2 sacks. So it just goes to show the type of high-level play that Orion's been playing at so far. But I would just kind of counter with your point in that Alan Bowman, yes, he can still run a little bit, but I think Duffy has that extra factor where he can break things open. I don't think he's got that breakaway speed anymore. It may be due to the injury that he had last year. I don't know. Sometimes things change, but I think at least in that sense, you have that elusiveness from your quarterback that maybe you didn't have last year. So yes, if you do kind of get hurried, you can move the pocket a little bit, get him to kind of feel a little bit more comfortable with some intermediate passes, get maybe Dante Thompson kind of into the game, Travis Kuntz, who we haven't heard a lot of lately, or as we saw last week, you find a perfect situation for a wide receiver screen and R.J. Turner goes up the middle and gets a real big gain, or Sir Roderick Thompson obviously found some things going. So certainly, I think when you look at the small portions, I know we talked about kind of critiquing each play when it comes to a bad call or can things turn around. If you look at certain plays, Texas Tech's offensive coordinator David Yost is finding situations where his players can be in the best position to make a play. So Roderick Thompson, he's found one for. R.J. Thompson, he's found one for. McLean Mannix, assuming that he's okay, he's found some for. I think the one thing that you haven't seen yet, which T.J. Vasher showed a little bit of against Baylor, is that big play ability. Can you pop the top off the defense? And I think that's going to be the extra added factor, because if you're able to do that, then you're kind of making the defenders not necessarily look in front of them. They have to know, oh, something could happen kind of behind us.
I think the key, when we mentioned it earlier, they're going to have to keep Iowa State honest. They have to get the running game going, at least on some level. I don't expect Sir Roderick Thompson to run for another 153-yard, 2-touchdown game, but they have to do enough to keep them, to keep every receiver from being double-covered. They have to keep them honest, because Iowa State has the 5th best passing defense, but Baylor threw on them well. Mm-hmm. So I think Tech can do very similar things to what Baylor did.
Now, granted, Baylor has Denzel Mims.
Remember. They do have Denzel Mims, but I think Tech has weapons to spread out the ball, to move down the field.
Oh, I agree. I absolutely agree. Now, the one thing that hurt them is inside receiver, where Xavier White got hurt, so he's out for the year. I think that hurts you a little bit. But you certainly have the talent at wide receiver. It's just, as I've mentioned before, and I will continue to say, even though I'm a broken record, you just don't have the guys behind them that can play at that same level. Yes, they'll play at a solid effort, but you just don't have that talent, that breakaway speed now that you need. But you certainly have guys that can make plays, and they showed that last week against Baylor.
And it just seems like the way Iowa State plays, they are completely fine with teams running the ball, getting a couple yards. Mm-hmm. You have to be able to throw on them.
Yes.
Which I don't think Tech's going to give up on the pass and just start running. I'm not saying that. Mm-hmm. But if you don't get that run established and you're only passing, that's also going to feed into what Iowa State wants. If you're going to get into an air raid battle with Iowa State, with this Texas Tech team, it's probably not going to be too good for you with this iteration this year, because Iowa State does have so many weapons, and Brock Purdy, he's gaining his yards every week, regardless if he's playing Iowa's defense, K-State's defense, or whoever.
Northern Iowa, too.
Northern Iowa, too, of course. Don't forget about that one.
So, of course, you can catch that. You can follow me at CM Silva Jr. on Twitter, at Don Williams, at AJ_Don Williams for our Twitter stuff, and then, of course, at Brad_Tollefson for his photos and all the other stuff. This game will be at 11 a.m. on Saturday at Jones AT&T Stadium. It's homecoming, of course, so don't forget there's going to be those festivities as well. Of course, Ryan will be there, too. We'll hang out and eat some delicious free food as well at the press box.
The one other thing I wanted to bring up, Carlos, is that trivia, if you wanted to answer my question.
I was actually about to lead into that. So with homecoming coming up, there's obviously a lot of history behind the Texas Tech football program. This is why I do this, man. This is why I do this, the transitions, you know. So what,
I shouldn't have said anything. I like that. That's very good.
So what type of historical record are you going to try and stump me on? Which I'm going to keep score of this, and I'm sure I'm going to be 0 for like 20 at some point.
So this is for the fans at home. You won't have a whole lot of time. You can always pause a podcast and think about it. Don't look it up. That's cheating. But Carlos, you have to answer it live, very on the spot. Don hopefully doesn't hear this between now and then, but he already told me on Monday he doesn't listen to
He really podcast. Doesn't.
So
he doesn't care.
I want to see what he does as well. But heading into this year, Texas Tech leads the series with Iowa State all time 11-6.
Okay.
Iowa State's first win all time came in 2002, 31-17.
Okay.
I went back and looked at the 2002 season. How many ranked teams did the Red Raiders play in that 2002 season, and what was their record in those games? So 12-game season, how many ranked opponents did they play, and what was their record in those games?
So you didn't tell me this was going to be a two-part question, and then, of course, I'm talking, so I can kind of stall a little bit as I break open the old memory bank. So I need to figure out how many ranked teams they played, and then I also have to figure out what the I'm basically guessing twice right now. So I'm gonna I could potentially be 0-2.
And if you knew the teams, I mean, you just get added bonus for that. That would be something for Don if he can also tell me who the teams are and what they're ranked.
So this was 2000 and what again?
2002.
2002. Jesus. Okay. So the only reason I know this is because I was actually talking with Don about this, which is so lucky. But not the answer.
Okay.
I just know what the season is because I know Ohio State was on that schedule. I know their record was like a 9-win season. I know that. I believe they went to a bowl that year. Mm-hmm. Again, I'm trying to stall right now as I'm trying to think.
They went to the Citrus Bowl.
Citrus
Bowl, Clemson.
That's right. That's right.
Won 55-15. This is not a recent Clemson team, but hey, still beat them.
I'm going to say they played.
So technically, if you count in all those, I wasn't counting the bowl game. If you do count the bowl game, they played 14 games.
Okay, let's
look at it that way.
Let's go with the bowl game.
Okay.
I'm going to say they played 4 ranked teams.
Okay. And what was the record?
I'm going to say they went 2-2.
Pretty far off, Carlos.
I'm sure I am. I know for a fact that they played like A&M. I know they played Missouri. I know they probably played Baylor, who was good. Or maybe they weren't. I don't know at that point. Oklahoma State was probably good.
So they played 13 games, not including the bowl game. If we're counting the bowl game, it's 14. But Clemson was not ranked, so that was not one of them.
Wow.
So just out of the 13 regular season, they played 7 ranked teams.
Please name them because
7 of them.
Mad.
Okay, they played first game of the year at number 13, Ohio State.
Well, that was the one I knew. Mm-hmm. I knew that one.
Their 4th non-conference game, which doesn't happen now.
And I knew they lost that one, by the way, so I at least know that.
They did lose that one.
Yeah.
They played in their last non-conference game here at Jones SBC Stadium at the time.
Mm-hmm.
They played number 17, NC State, which they lost 51-48 in overtime.
Wow.
2 weeks later, at Kyle Field, they played at the number 23, Texas A&M Aggies. Mm-hmm. They won.
Yeah.
A week later, they played at the number 11, Iowa State Cyclones. They lost 31-17. Yeah. 2 weeks later, they played at the number 21, Colorado Buffaloes. They lost 37-13. 3 weeks later, they played the number 4, Texas Longhorns, beat them 42-38. Mm. The very next week, they played their last ranked game at the number 4 Oklahoma Sooners. When they were ranked number 24, their first ranking of the year, they lost 60-15. So the answer would be they played 7 ranked teams that year.
So I was off by 3.
And they went 2-5.
I did get the total right. I did get the wins right.
You got 2 wins.
I got that right.
And if you want to look at it this way.
So is that 0.5 I got right?
I'll give you a half a point. That's not terrible.
I'm fine with that.
One good thing you want to see, they might have gone 2-5 in ranked games. Against ranked Texas opponents, they went 2-0. At number 23 A&M, they won. Host number 4 Texas, they won.
Those are the two that people cared about.
So 2-0 against the Texas ranked teams.
Yeah.
0-5 against the other ranked teams.
Well, we'll see how Texas Tech does against Iowa State.
And we'll see how Don does.
Yeah, and we'll see how Don does. So I'm going to try and remember this. If not, just text me and I'll remember to ask him. If he gets this right, I'm actually going to be impressed. Although, like I said, he's going to do exactly what I did. He's going to be like, well, they played Ohio State.
I would like to see if he can know how many, what their record was. And if he gets those, just keep pushing him. See if he knows each of the opponents they play.
Oh, man.
Like, see if he can just name, oh, they played Ohio State. They played NC State. They played, I think it was A&M was number 23.
Here's the thing. Like, I've had times, and I can't remember if I've discussed this with you, where I'm talking with him at the press box, and he can tell you, like, the time of day.
Weather, probably.
The weather. There was one time I asked him about the offensive line for a team, and he remembered it. So, I mean, if he gets it right, I'm not going to be shocked. If he gets it wrong, I'll be more shocked, honestly.
We'll see.
So, on that note, that's a lot of football. I know you want to talk a little bit of basketball. I'm a little tired because I actually woke up at, like, 7 this morning, El Paso time. It's now 2:49. Mm-hmm. Lubbock time, which I actually have to be done a little bit. Let's do some quick Tech basketball. Yes, they lost 70-60 to UTEP in a game that doesn't matter, other than, of course, the final result, which was obviously raising some money for the hashtag El Paso Strong, the organization. I know there was going to be some good money being made. I believe there was about 4,000 plus people. So at $10 a pop, you can kind of do the math there. And hopefully that's going to do some good things for the people in El Paso that obviously were in a bad situation a couple months ago. Fortunately, I didn't know anyone. I know everyone's been asking me about that. Did have one person from a kindergarten that I knew that obviously had someone that was affected. But everyone is obviously thinking of them and everything else, as Chris Beard had mentioned during the postgame press conference. And that was really at the forefront of this game. But then, of course, everyone, especially on the El Paso airwaves, thinks that UTEP's going to win another national title at this point because they won 70-60 over Texas Tech. But in terms of my analysis, I know everyone's been wondering. Edwards played well. Jamias played well. Moretti played well-ish. He had 8 points. Six of them were from the free throw line, so he was obviously aggressive, got to the basket when coach kind of told him to be more aggressive. He was 1 for 5 from the field. The thing that kind of, I mean, again, it's an exhibition game. They played, I shouldn't say they played, they practiced 9 times before that, if I'm not mistaken, is what Chris Beard had mentioned. So you obviously would have liked a little bit more time to practice, but I think if anything, you took some things. The one thing that they didn't do was play defense very well. And by that, I meant they gave up 8 three-pointers out of 19. I'm trying to remember. Darryl Edwards had the big game. He was 6 for 8 from the three-point line, led all players with 24 points. So if you do the math, 6 times 3 is 18. So 18 of his 24 points were from the three-point line. And then he got a couple more from the free throw line. He was a transfer from LSU. For those that don't know UTEP, only because I know UTEP and I know some people there, they had probably the best practice squad last year. They had so many sit-out transfers, including Anthony Tark, a player that Texas Tech was looking at as well. As I mentioned before, Darryl Edwards was really good. Bryson Williams, a guy from Fresno State, is really good. This could be a team that could win the conference. That being Conference USA, this could be a team. I wouldn't be shocked if they're in the top three. And the fact that Texas Tech played them pretty tough, had a lead for a little bit late on in that game, but it's just the three-point shot just really hurt them. And the other thing, too, is when that goes and you have a big crowd behind you, yeah, it was 4,000. I believe 12,000 is the capacity at the Don Haskins Center, depending on how you want to say official. I've seen 12,222, so take that for what it's worth. But they were all loud, got behind the old Miners once they did start to kind of heating up after Texas Tech was up 45-43, I believe, about 9.5 minutes in the second half left. And then all of a sudden they just started going and going and going and got to that 70-60 victory. Biggest thing, work in progress. Beard will say that multiple times. I don't know if you wanted to say anything, Ryan, but that's really the biggest thing, is they need to play a little bit better defense. They've got the athletes, the length, the speed to do it. I think they just need some time to kind of be more cohesive.
My main question for you, since obviously all I got to see was some highlights that our El Paso station actually sent us, which I'm very appreciative of that, but didn't get actually watch the game, break it down.
Yeah.
My main question for you, and something that I'm looking for in practice, what I'm going to look for in those early games, is how did the new guys look as far as, you know, bringing in those grad transfers? You bring in a lot of freshmen. Not, you said they didn't really gel a whole lot, but can you see the talent there? Can you see like the potential for what they can potentially be down the year?
Oh, absolutely. Like I said, this is going to be a real good defensive team. I think you're going to get a lot of points off transition. That being, if you obviously, since you're long and lengthy with some of the wingspans of some of these guys, you're going to get some tip balls, kind of like what happened last year with Matt Mooney and his, I believe he had a 6'9 wingspan. Mm-hmm. So you'll get those tips, those deflections, as Mark Adams likes to use. You're going to get a lot of that. So with that, you have a guy in Jamias Ramsey that can run the floor. You got a guy in Terrence Shannon that can run the floor. He didn't play in that game. He was limping a little bit before. Again, it's an exhibition game. You're obviously not going to play guys if they're kind of banged up. Chris Beard mentioned that after the postgame or during postgame press conference that some guys were banged up, so obviously you're not going to use a lot. I thought Andrei Stavrosov looked really good. He was 1 for 2 from the three-point line, 2 for 4 from the floor. Russell Tekwa actually looked pretty good. Chewa, I believe is how it's said. He looked
really
good.
Whatever you say, I'm going to go with.
Yeah, he was 2 for 2 from the free throw line. Beard was fired up that he made him. He has a really good shooting stroke. At least the way I kind of judge it is the way you shoot your free throws or the way you shoot a three-point shot or any other shot. He's got a real good stroke there. He had 4 points, 3 rebounds. I thought that was good. But I think the biggest thing is these guys just need time to get used to each other, kind of figure out their roles. Edwards is going to be a good three-point shooter, a guy that can slash. Moretti's going to be your three-point shooter. He's going to be your leader. He's going to be your point guard. I think Ramsey's going to be a guy that can slash, that can get up and down the court, can make a couple threes to kind of fire you up or maybe get that big-time dunk that you need. Clark is a great rebounding guard. I think that's the biggest thing. He's a potential double-double waiting to happen. He had 9 points and 8 rebounds in that game. Clarence Ndolny, I think he could be a good reserve guard as well for you. I think that's the one thing, is you've got so much depth this year. Is that's the one thing that impressed me, is the depth. It's just, can you kind of get it all to click? Because last year you didn't have to get a bunch of guys to click. You had to get two guys, that being Matt Mooney and Tariq Owens, to kind of click, because you had everyone else come back. This one, you've got Kyler Edwards, Davide Moretti, Avery Benson, as guys that returned from last year that saw either some time on the floor, that being Avery Benson, or Edwards and Moretti, who saw some significant time on the floor. And those are going to be guys that you're going to have to rely on in terms of the leadership. You brought in some graduate transfers who didn't play the year before, which kind of makes them unique in that sense. They're going to have to obviously step up with their leadership and see what goes on there. And from there, you kind of look at some of the freshmen. Ramsey has potential. Shannon has potential, as you saw in the Bahamas. And then the rest of it is just kind of hodgepodge at that point. I say that in the nicest terms. Like, they just have a lot of talent. You just have to figure out what the roles are. And I think that's what this non-conference schedule is going to figure out for Texas Tech, is what are the roles? What can these guys do well? And once you get to Iowa in the Continental Tire Las Vegas International Tournament, it's a lot to say, I know. Basically a tournament in New Orleans, or Orleans Arena, pardon me, in Las Vegas. Once you get there, I think you're going to see what Texas Tech is, because at that point, you're going to have 5 games under your belt. And I think at that point, you're going to either have a deep or a shortened bench, and you're going to know who's going to be making plays for you at that point.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, I have nothing to break down because I didn't get to see the game, but obviously Carlos is the Mr. College basketball, gets an AP vote and everything. This is who I go to, Lord, for my information.
Oh, please don't. Please don't do that. But yeah, so obviously we'll get all that information once college basketball starts, speaking of which, I believe it's 22 or 21 days from now. I believe it starts
21, obviously, right?
November the 5th.
It's a Tuesday, I believe.
November the 5th, a Tuesday, 7 p.m. That's when Texas Tech hosts Eastern Illinois to start their non-conference schedule. 4 days after, they're going to host Bethune-Cookman at 7 p.m., United Supermarkets Arena as well. Those will both be on Fox Sports Plus if you're not able to go there. So should be a good year for Texas Tech and everyone else as they start another year following a season where they got to the program's first ever national championship appearance. So appreciate y'all listening. I'm Carlos Silva, the sports editor of the Lubbock Avalanche Journal, alongside Ryan King, KLBK weekend reporter, or reporter extraordinaire.
Yeah, sports bar, whatever you want to say.
Whatever works. But appreciate y'all listening. Don't forget to check out everything on LubbockOnline.com. And then, of course, in the print edition of the Lubbock Avalanche Journal each day. And, of course, Saturday, don't forget to follow us at CM Silva Jr., at AJ_Don Williams, and at Brad Tollefson for all the information from the 11 a.m. kick against Iowa State. It's homecoming. Don't forget to head out to Jones 18 Tasty. Should be a good one. Appreciate y'all. We'll talk to you next week.